KJS. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 15 minutes for initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you so choose. Please make sure you keep track of the time. The clock is over to the right when you're at the podium. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed whenever you are ready.
Thank you, Governor.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jill Frieders on behalf of the appellant, Taya Laubach. The parties have two children, ages 11 and 7. Their youngest will turn 8 later this month. I want to point out one correction that needs to be made in my brief. At one point in time, we referred it to the divorce decree. It's a custody decree. The parties were never married. So I apologize for that mistake in our brief. The case is about whether or not the judge's decision in this case was a de facto modification of custody or modification of parenting time. In this case, the appellant mother was awarded sole physical custody. That's clear that their stipulated decree awards her sole physical custody of the children. Respondent father had 3 overnights out of every 8 days. He had an equitable amount of holidays. He had a complicated work schedule, so they anticipated that they would divide the holidays to maximize the holidays given dad's work schedule. And then each parent had 2 weeks of uninterrupted time in the summer for vacations. At the father's request, the district court increased his parenting time from 37.5% to 50%. He went from 3 out of 8 days to 7 days on, 7 days off, 7 days on, 7 days off. It's our position that the court erred, that this substantial change in parenting time is not a simple modification of parenting time. It is a change in custody.
So, counsel, this seems like the very issue that was before the Supreme Court in the MJH case.
Correct.
And they said that, you know, simply going to 50-50 shared time isn't in and of itself a de facto change of custody. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances. So where does the court's order fall short in following MJH?
Well, in MJH, the Supreme Court said that you need to look at the duration of time the children were with each parent. You have to look at the totality of the circumstances. They list a few factors that they said were not inclusive. The distance between the homes, the relationship the children have with the parents, the historical schedule that existed. You have to look at that totality and then make a determination of whether or not this is a significant change that would put it in the change of custody endangerment category, or is it a lesser change that would be a best interest category?
Well, and in finding number 6 in the district court's order, they address some of those factors to some degree and conclude that it wasn't a substantial change that would modify the custodial arrangement. So why isn't that sufficient to comply with the Supreme Court's directives in MJH?
When I look at MJH and the facts of this case, the only significant difference that I could see, given the facts that are set out in the Supreme Court's decision, is the distance between the parents' home. But other than that, the facts are very similar. Young children, 8-year-old in MJH, a 7-year-old and 10-year-old at the time of this hearing, so young children, we have young children who have been consistently in their mother's primary care for their entire lives. They always have been. The only distinguishing factor is that in MJH, the father lived, I think it was an hour away.
Was the difference in time, the change in time, bigger in MJH?
I think it was similar. I believe it was similar time. you know, at 37.5%, parenting time schedule is a pretty normal kind of schedule. It's not a 50% schedule, but it's beyond the 25%. That's the minimum that by statute. So when I look at this case, and I look at MJH, it seems that the court has to look at a lot more factors than. I mean, if we're just going to say we're going to limit it to, well, does dad live closer than an hour, then he can have 50-50 custody. If that's the only thing we're looking at for a difference, then I don't think that's what MJH stands for. I think MJH stands for you have to look at the totality of the circumstances and what's truly best for these children. And is it truly best for these children? I mean, is it a significant change for these children? Yes.
So it went from, you know, a parent having every other week in custody mm-hmm. and then having full week, which mm-hmm. is all school and everything and probably went away and all of that. I mean, here on this sort of rolling 8-day schedule, did dad, with the 37%, have both weekend and weekday time?
He did.
Okay, so he was sending the kids to school and picking up from school as well as spending the weekend.
Yes, there was. Because of dad's rolling schedule, the children would have spent some weekdays with him and some weekend time with him.
And both
yes.
mother and father, in terms of going back to the distance issue, though, in this case, unlike in the Supreme Court case, both of them are located fairly close to each other and fairly close to the school, correct?
Correct.
So that...
That's not... That is
another difference
yeah,
between the Supreme
Court. Because of the distance that in MGH, the father was further away. That father said he would drive the child to school. So, I mean, he was offering to take the child to the same school district. But
that yeah. also is increasing the children's time with the father then, there, which is why that case seems to be different than
different. Mm-hmm.
in terms of looking at the facts.
So I don't think that the law is that if the parents live in the same school district and the children have a good relationship with each parent, there's an automatic transfer to 50-50 if a parent requests it.
No, certainly, and it's the totality of the circumstances mm-hmm. that you talk about. And I guess, like, aside from the time, which mm-hmm. is one, mm-hmm. that you argue from 37 to 50, what are other circumstances?
These children are young. They have lived primarily with their mother their entire lives. They are now going to she saw them at least every other day. They were with their mother. They were never away from their mother more than 2 days on the old system, except during the summer. Now they go 7 days without seeing her. No contact at all. That's,
when you say no contact, are you talking just no physical contact? Not actually physically being able to see mother or communicate with mother while with father?
It's very different than getting to see their mother every 2 days.
You're talking yeah. actually physical contact.
Yes. Okay. And that is significant for children of this age. You don't normally see a 50-50 schedule, 1 week on, 1 week off, until the children are teenagers. It's quite unusual for...
Can you cite cases to that effect where you don't have children being split between parents? I mean, isn't it very common, quite frankly, if you've got a 50-50 split, that the children may spend 1 week with one parent and then spend the next week with another?
It is not common.
It is uncommon.
Right. I mean, I don't know that there's Supreme Court or Court of Appeals case law that talks of specific parenting time schedules. All I do is practice family law. A week on, week off schedule, I see it with teenagers, and then it's often it's maybe Wednesday is with the other parent. It's unusual for children to go 7 days without seeing another parent. Or we use a 2-2-3 schedule or a 2-2-5 schedule if it's a true 50-50 schedule.
Okay, so were those proposed?
My client proposed that father have every other weekend, Friday after school until Monday morning, and then in the alternating week, an overnight. So she was trying to accommodate the change in his schedule.
But would that...
It would not have been 50-50,
okay,
no.
That's my question.
Yeah, it would not have been 50-50.
Okay.
And there is no preference in the case law or statute for 50-50. It's a schedule that meets the needs of the children, that is in the children's best interests.
Right, but when we're looking at it on review, we're looking at what the district court decided and whether mm-hmm. the district court's decision mm-hmm. was an abuse of discretion.
Mm-hmm. And did this judge abuse her discretion by determining that changing the parenting time in the way that she did was that a substantial change in circumstances that should have been an endangerment analysis rather than a best interest analysis? And
that's
I think
a noble review, isn't it?
It is.
The judge applied the appropriate standard.
It is.
So is your argument here that we should reverse the finding of the court that the best interest standard applies and remand it to apply the endangerment standard, or that we should find that there's insufficient findings for us to determine that and remand it for further consideration and findings by the trial court?
My first preference would be for you to determine that there was no allegations of a prima facie case of endangerment, that didn't meet the Bolin-Murtha standard or the Nice-Peterson standard, therefore the district court's decision should just be simply reversed. Because there was not a
fact-finding court, and okay. So how would we do that?
Well, you would say, well,
I mean, even if you look at NJH, the Supreme Court specifically refers to in its last paragraph, accordingly, the district court's order contains sufficient findings to conclude that Christensen's motion was a substantial change. So the Supreme Court's obviously looking at the findings of the court and making a determination as to whether or not the district court erred in applying one
yes.
standard or the other.
So this court often reviews endangerment cases and makes determinations whether or not trial court properly found a prima facie basis for a change. So this court has done that in the past. But if this panel's not comfortable with that, a remand back to the district court to evaluate this matter under the endangerment standard and the Nice-Peterson case line of cases, the Bolin v. Murtha line of cases would be appropriate.
And do you think, counsel, that the findings are sufficient to decide that this, in fact, under the totality of circumstances, is a change of custody case?
I think it is a change of custody
right.
case.
Do you think the findings are sufficient for us to conclude de novo based on those findings that it is, in fact, a change of custody case versus, let's say,
the district court made no findings about endangerment or change of custody. The district.
Right, well, what we know, though, is that district court needs to make factual
findings. Yes.
Based on those factual findings, it's a de novo question of whether that, in fact, is a change of custody, right?
Yes, you have to. You would review it de novo.
Right, and I'm just asking whether you think the order is sufficient as it is to for us to look at and give de novo review and say this is, in fact, a change of custody.
I do think that a review of this would show that it is a change of custody.
Findings
shows that there wasn't a basis for.
I wanted to ask, I just want to make sure maybe I misheard and misunderstand. Was there a difference in the summer versus the school year schedule?
Yes.
And what was the summer schedule?
In the summer, each parent had the right to 2 weeks of uninterrupted time.
Oh, the 2 weeks.
Yeah, so each parent had 2 weeks.
Okay.
But doesn't that kind of get your argument that they've never been away from mother for longer than a couple of days? The fact that in the past they have been with father for 2 weeks at a time. Not just
once a year, going on vacation, yes.
Okay. But that does cut against your argument that they haven't been away.
Okay, I should not have used the word never. Except for during their summer vacations, they've not been away from their mother more than 2 days at a time. Yeah, and I'd have to look back. I think it was non-consecutive, so I don't even think it was 2 weeks. I think it was 1 week at a time. Okay. The father did not allege endangerment.
Well, he really didn't have to, though, did he? I mean, they framed this issue as a increase in parenting time. You raised the issue of, no, this is actually a de facto custody change, so the endangerment statute or the endangerment standard needs to be met. So that's how the issue was framed for the district court.
Correct.
It was never pled as a change of custody, which would then implicate the prima facie showing by the father. So I don't know how that would have been, you know, I don't know procedurally how that would have come before the court here, where the court could have made those findings. I'm having a hard time understanding that argument.
My time is up. If I can answer.
You may answer that question.
I mean, the district court has to apply the law. A parent could come in and say, I want to change parenting time from, make it extreme, to make it obvious, from 25% to 75%. And this is in the best interest of the children. And it, at that point in time, the district court would have to apply the endangerment standard to make that evaluation, unless we read MJH to apply to all changes of parenting time, and then there's no reason to ever even consider the endangerment statute, and we have changed the law from endangerment to best interest, which isn't true. The district court still has to apply the law. The district court cannot look at this case in a vacuum and say, well, they didn't plead endangerment, therefore I'm not going to look at endangerment. And it was argued that this is not an appropriate change in the parenting time, and that it didn't meet the endangerment statute. And if every case that somebody comes in for a modification of parenting time, we completely disregard the old schedule and the needs of the children and just go to 50-50 because that's what a parent wants, that's a significant change and doesn't meet endangerment, and it doesn't meet the best interest of the children either.
Thank you, Counsel. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Katrina Villegas, here on behalf of the respondent, who was the petitioner in the underlying district court matter, Jeremy Salen, who is with us present today. To keep things running smoothly and straightforward, I'll just cut to the chase here, Your Honors, with the understanding that if any facts need to be clarified, that I'm obviously here for that as well. All we're here to do today is to ask this court to affirm the district court's October 1st, 2018 order in full for two simple reasons. The first reason is that the district court selected the right law. In other words, it did properly apply the MJH case or Christensen v. Healy to look at the totality of these parties and these children's circumstances and determined that it was just a parenting time modification case so that the best interest of the child standard could be used and not also a de facto physical custody modification case, which would have required the endangerment standard to be applied.
Well, but mother was granted sole physical custody, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And if we're going to an every other week, 7 days with mother, 7 days with father, isn't that turning into a joint physical custody?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Not in this particular case. I think the devil's in the details on this one, and so if I could, the schedule of the parties is very important here. It is correct to say that if we're just looking at the 3 out of every 8 work days that the petitioner father was originally given overnights, that is only 37.5% parenting time. But what is important for this court to keep in mind, and which the district court did understand, was that the holiday schedule and the vacation schedule had a net gain for the father, so that it wasn't just 35, 37%. It was much more like 40%. And then, as I hope I explained very clearly in the brief, these parties, unlike, as I understood it, MJH, had a right of first refusal that, once it was redefined in 2016, was complied with, and also had the net gain effect of father having much more frequent interaction with the children on a day-to-day basis, including during the school year, school days, school nights, etc. So just by raising his time to 50%, it does not make it a joint physical custody situation. He has never asked that that label be changed or that the mother's status be changed in that respect.
I don't think any factual findings about the right of first refusal and what impact it had on father's time. Can you speak to that? Is that something that we can consider? I don't know. I didn't review the whole record, so I don't know whether it's undisputed by the parties that the amount of time that was gained.
I'll try to walk a fine line here, Your Honor. Thank you for the chance to clarify that. It's fair to say that as of the 2018 litigation, both parties and counsel that appeared in front of the district court agreed that the right of first refusal, as redefined in the 2016 order, was being complied with by both sides. There was no admission to my recollection on the mother's counsel's part that had the effect of increasing father's time, because of course there were opportunities when he had to work and then relinquish time to mother.
It might.
But the practical effect for these parties is that it was created in the very first place back when the paternity case was brand new in order to have additional time for father, because with his work schedule being a rotating 8 days, irrespective of, you know, a regular person's and the school schedule of Monday through Friday, there were more opportunities for him to pick up a day here and there when mother had to work Monday through Friday, but father had the day off because it was his day 3 or 4 or any of the other number of days on his regularly scheduled shifts that were known at least a year in advance that he would have those opportunities. I don't think the same can be said of mother, because his original parenting time schedule was specifically created when he would be available, not the other way around. Does that clarify that for the court? Okay.
Do you agree, counsel, that whether it's the endangerment or best interest standard is a de novo review issue for this court, but that we need to review the trial court's findings to determine whether they took into account the appropriate circumstances in making the decision that the trial court made?
Yes, Your Honor, I do understand that. And that is why our first argument is that even with a de novo standard, we're asking the court to affirm the district court's determination that this was a best interest case and not an endangerment case based upon those totalities.
So, and I know you briefed this somewhat, but help me understand that this order has 11 findings of fact. At least 5 of them are historical and really don't address either endangerment issues or best interest issues. So what do you point us to in the district court's findings that supports her conclusion that this is a best interest case, not an endangerment case?
Okay, I'm just gonna grab my binder right there, Your Honor. Near the very end of our brief.
Yeah, I'm looking at the appellate's brief. It's in there, it's on page 3 of your appendix.
Okay.
That's
it does. Thank you. Thank you. When I reviewed that 2018 order, Your Honor, I did note that of the 12 best interest factors, at least 5 were not relevant to this case, absence of domestic abuse, et cetera, so that there were still 7 best interest factors, which I do believe the findings did address in some respects, specifically findings of fact number 6 regarding father's regular parenting time with the children, especially during the school week, which I understand does not specifically state due to the right of first refusal, but certainly that was the history before the court at the time. Findings of fact number 7 regarding father's parenting time continuing to increase. Findings of fact number 8 regarding the good relationship that the children had with both parents.
These are findings that support the best interests.
Correct.
Okay, we're not talking about the findings that support the conclusion that this is not a change of custody. So you can continue with that, but I'd also be interested in what findings should be looked at to determine what standard
of custody. Oh, I see. Well, if I was answering the wrong question, I may as well just stop right now and take another crack at it. If the question was, what findings did the district court made that makes this not a de facto custody question? Okay, then why don't
I? Can state it either way, or that supports your decision that it's a best interest case.
Right.
As opposed to
the fact of change. Then I will go to the brief, as you said. Apologize, respondents, appellants, brief, there you go. 2015, here we go. All right. I would suggest to this court that the findings beginning with page 2, findings of fact number 4, do address many of the totality of circumstances, factors from the MJH case that shows how this case does not need to be a de facto custody modification case. The first would be that there is a significant change of circumstances in this case. It's not just that dad asked for 50% parenting time because it had been 2 years since his last parenting time request. It was that he had a permanent schedule change from the day shift, night shift, 8 days on, year-round, inflexible schedule to a Monday through Friday, daytime-only schedule. And so, in many respects, the former parenting time schedule was simply obsolete. Some sort of change needed to be made. I would also suggest that her finding regarding the increased age of the children and the increased parenting time with the father do also suggest that the apportionment of parenting time here is much closer between the parents than it would at first glance appear versus MJH, where at least according to my calculations, the father in that case not only had very limited parenting time during the school year by agreement, but it was much closer to the statutory minimum of 25% on paper and as exercised. That's just not the case that we have here today. Although the court doesn't make a finding regarding the short distance between the children's homes, it's safe to say that the court was well aware of that. Judge Byers has been on this case for the life of the case. Neither parent has moved since the time the initial case was filed back in, I believe it was 2013. And the court also knew that these parents lived within the same school district, city designations and zip codes aside, so that this is really just a change in parenting time and not intended to have any impact upon the physical custody designation or mother's daily care and control of the children.
Well, finding number 6 does talk about the increased age of the children, but they're still relatively young. I mean, they're not teenagers.
Correct.
So why does that, it seems to lean more toward an endangerment rather than best interest standard to apply?
Well, I do have to, of course, concede that the children are not teenagers, Your Honor. However, I would again suggest that this isn't a situation where the father only had parenting time every other weekend and a few weeks during the summer, so that it was a significant change and, you know, could possibly cause stress to the children to go to a 50-50 schedule. This was one where, just as appellant's counsel has stated, father also saw the children almost every other day. There were frequent interactions. There were frequent parenting time exchanges. Sometimes they were only there at his home for a few hours after school prior to mother getting off of work. But the reality is, as experienced by these children, they were used to very frequent interactions with both parents anyway.
But
so,
frequent interactions is different than where you're staying overnight for children. And stability of children is very, very key, particularly in early ages.
Yes.
So now you're talking not just seeing for a few hours here and there, which is all fine and well, but now for a significant amount of, 7 days for a child, 7 hours, 7 minutes for a child, it seems like an eternity, unlike now.
Right, right.
As an adult.
And I do understand that, Your Honor, of course, I do. But the district court was aware of all of that. The district court was also aware that the current schedule was not as routine as the children should have had given their ages. There was confusion about which bus they should get on. There was confusion about where they were going for that night because the work schedule my client had at the time could not possibly align very well with a Monday through Friday schedule. And so even though it does seem like a big leap for, especially if we were just talking about the younger child without an older sibling, to go to 7 days on, 7 days off, this schedule did have the effect of simplifying and creating less stress for the children, not more stress.
Can I go back to the question about the factors that support a conclusion that there's not going to change the custody? And I was wondering about, you referenced the father's change in schedule. How does the father's change in schedule impact whether there's been a change in mother's daily care? I mean, the argument that this isn't a change, a custody change, that mother retains sort of a primary, or I don't think it's primary, but whatever, what do those totality circumstances have to show in order to show it's not a change from physical custody? And I'm not quite seeing why what happens with his work actually plays a role.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think that goes more towards why this case also isn't a change in the children's primary residence, if I will. And I would say for that, that it's not a change in primary residence or a change in custody because nothing about a change in parenting time impacted where the children go to school, mother's authority over extracurricular activities, the children's socialization with their peers. Religion is not a factor here, otherwise, where the children worship would have an impact as well. It went from a very upheaval lack of routine to a routine where mother's authority is actually not subject to contest anymore. It actually had the impact of increasing her physical custody status in a way. I see I'm almost out of time, so I'll wait for any questions.
To be none. Thank you, Counsel.
Okay, thank you.
Just, I think you left these things.
Oh, my apologies.
No problem.
Thank you.
All right. I would just like to address a couple of things. I was asked about the children's two-week parenting time, the vacations. I reviewed the parties' agreement, and they were two one-week non-consecutive. So the children did spend a week with each parent, not seeing the other parent for the purposes of vacation, twice each summer. My client proposed that it's clear that dad's change in work schedule is a change and that they needed to update the parenting time schedule to reflect his new work schedule. That makes sense. She proposed that he would alternate Friday after school until Monday after school. So there would be pick up at school, drop off at school every other week. And in the alternate week, he would have the children. The next week, they would be with dad from Wednesday after school until Friday after school. So he would have every other weekend and every other Wednesday until Friday. So she was trying to accommodate the change in his work schedule, allow him to continue to have a meaningful relationship with his children, but not change it so dramatically that it goes from 37.5 to 50%. She is the children's custodial parent. Physical custody and residence means the routine daily care and control and the residence of the child. And I heard opposing counsel say that nothing in this new order has changed that. She does not have her children 7 days out of 14. Every other week, she does not have...
How is any of that relevant in light of the Supreme Court's guidance in MJH that says whether it's 49-51, 50-50, that's not dispositive.
True.
What's dispositive is the totality of the
Correct.
Circumstances. So I don't find the percentages persuasive here.
Okay.
Seems like the Supreme Court is telling us these are individual cases. We need to look at the individual factors mm-hmm. that the district court does in order to apply the appropriate standard. So I don't know if that's a question. It's more of a comment.
Sure. I understand.
But I'll let you respond to it.
Yes. I do agree that they're telling us totality of the circumstances. I think as a lawyer, we kind of like bright line rules, and MJH does not give us a bright line rule. It's kind of a fuzzy rule. But I think fundamental in this is the needs of the children. And I think that the needs of the adults got looked at for this judge. I'm not sure that the judge got in the weeds with respect to the needs for these kids. And I think that's where, when I read the judge's decision, I'm left wanting. I don't understand how this specific schedule meets the needs of these specific children. And nor do I understand
well,
how
it... Doesn't it, in the sense of continuity for them? Now they know each week where they're going to be. It's not going to be switching every day and where are we going to go for the next few hours here? What bus do we have to take? Which home are we going to today? Now, doesn't this actually create some certainty for them? Because now they know each week, okay, from yep. this day to this day, this is where we're going to go, this is where we're going to stay, this is where we're going to...
It may create certainty. I'm not sure that it creates stability given the age of these children.
But isn't that really essentially the same thing, though, in terms of providing that stability to them?
Rather
than having children going off all over the place?
They have... The most certain schedule would be always with one parent. So, I mean, that's not the, I mean, that a certain schedule is not the standard, but stability for the children. And when you look at the modification of parenting time statute, it talks about meeting the developmental needs of the children. And a week on, week off schedule creates certainty. It does not necessarily create stability, especially given the age of these children, to be away from, using archaic language, their primary caretaker.
Right, but wasn't part of the finding that the children have a good relationship with both parents?
Having a good relationship isn't the standard. I hope that all kids have a good relationship with their parents, but that doesn't mean that their primary residence should be changed from what it's always been to a new schedule that's 50-50.
But okay, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you both, counsels. Very well argued, very well briefed. We appreciate that. We'll be issuing an order within the statutory time frame for this matter. That is our third case out of 6 cases for oral argument. We have 2 more for oral argument. 10-minute recess.